Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody, to the Stat Sheet Podcast. Ben Parker here. Simon's in the building. Ronan's in the building. We've got the 49ers beating the Lions, the Chiefs over the Ravens. We've got coaching hires. We've got the coordinator hires, personnel hires. We've got stuff all over the board. We're ready to talk about it tonight. I'm going to be Dan Campbell's biggest supporter this week. We'll find out if Simon agrees. We'll find out if Ronan agrees. I can't wait to get their thoughts on it. I'm going to go scorched earth here, just to lead off the bat, everybody. But again, welcome into the building. Let me get started here on my rant, my criticism, my scorched earth take on what the national media has done the last 24 hours since Dan Campbell allegedly blew the entire game and should probably be fired and excommunicated from the NFL forever and ever again. Allegedly, according to the national media, again, not everybody, I don't mean to gloss everybody, but all we've been hearing on SportsCenter and on the podcast and on the daily talk shows over the past 24 hours is that Dan Campbell somehow has become lead villain, lead buffoon, lead tyrant, lead fool in a cast of characters that managed to choke up a 17-point lead to the 49ers last night. And somehow those two fourth down decisions that he's made all year have come back to actually destroy Detroit. And in their one shot in 50-some years, they have now completely blown it. So, listen, there's any number of things we can blame on for this loss for the Detroit Lions. You could blame it on the dropped interception. You could blame it on the dropped touchdown pass. You could blame it on the two dropped first down passes that would have got them in the second quarter. You can blame it on the fumble from Gibbs, which was a huge turnaround. You can blame it on Ben Johnson and a couple of the play calls if you want to. You can even blame Dan Campbell at the end of the game for not saving that timeout and running the ball on third down with a minute and five to go. You can blame it on any number of things. The one thing you can't start off with, because it's not the most important, is those two fourth and shorts that Dan Campbell decided to go for and ended up missing. Heck, you can blame the Detroit Lions offense for not executing on those. You can blame the Detroit Lions offense late in the first half for having first and goal at the 49ers 7 and not being able to finish that off and turn it into a touchdown drive. You can blame them for even getting into fourth and shorts on these plays when they had an offense that the 49ers just could not figure out all night. There's any number of things you can go to. I would have to get down to 12th or 13th on the list before I would even think about dropping Dan Campbell in as being the lead dog here. And yet that seems to be the dialogue coming out of this Lions, again, probably somewhat historic loss to the 49ers. I'm going to take a breath. Simon, do you agree or am I an idiot?
Oh man, those are tough choices there, Ben. If those are my only choices, I'll say I agree. Now, here's my pushback, and it's a small one, because if you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm very pro analytics. I'm very pro be aggressive, go for it. You're a top five offense. Lean on your offense. I'm a very like. Not that I'm that good at math, but I very much believe in math. It's one of those things that I won't use the real reference, but you might know what I'm talking about. I don't know it, but I can say it. I can point it out when I see it, right? That kind of situation. Being aggressive and going for it on these fourth downs and the fake punts and the trick plays and everything, that's how the Lions got here. That's how the Lions got to 12 wins this season. That's how the Lions won the NFC North. That's how the Lions won two rounds of the playoffs and got to the NFC Championship game for the first time since, what, 1950-something, whatever it was. All of that is true. When you have a sample size large enough of dozens and dozens or 100 fourth down attempts and all these things, all these aggressive moves, the math says you do it, because more times than not, it's going to pay off for you. And when you do it and are successful and it pays off and you get seven versus the times that you might get three or you might punt the ball away and you give up seven, it goes in your favor. All of that said, when you have lost all momentum in the second half, you've given up 17 straight points. The time left on the clock gives each team maybe one more possession after what you decide to do on this fourth down play. And you are down by three. And I'm going to get into my caveat for that, and of my caveat in a minute. But you have a chance to tie the football game. You have three timeouts. Your defense played really well for one half of football. It has gotten you this far. There's, I think, going to be 8 to 9 minutes left on the clock at this point. It's so hard to not take the points. And I'm not even saying it was the wrong decision, because here's the thing. One of the things in coaching that we don't know what they've done their homework on, their research on, what their numbers say, their individual analysis is, Dan Campbell probably has a sheet on his piece of paper that says, if it's this distance of a field goal, kick it. And if it's this distance of a field goal, go for it, right? And there's some sort of graph where there's an intersection of the X and Y axis of like this distance of a fourth down, right? If it's like 4 and under yards and it's a 47 to plus yard field goal, right? That intersection, that's where we go for it versus kick it. He might not trust this kicker, right? That Michael Badgley, who has been on the team this year for 4 games, he was on and off this team last season. They haven't kicked with him this year. He's had, I think, one kick this season with the Lions between 40 and 49 yards. He made it, by the way. I don't even know if it was 48 or if it was 41 yards, right? Huge difference. So I get that. All right. If he probably, Campbell is a, I don't, he's a smart guy, right? To Ben's point, Ben's defense, Campbell's not some meathead, right? He is smart now. And at the same time, if you're like, analytics, I hate analytics, Dan Campbell's not always making these decisions based on analytics. He's making this decision because he is the most macho NFL dude that's coaching a football team. He's like, I can convert any fourth down. Screw you. Yeah. All that said, I always try to get a tweet off when I'm watching a game and there's a fourth down decision before the play happens, right? Because I don't want my thought process to be results based. But the feeling I had going into that fourth down decision was, man, I hope they're going to kick this ball. I really wish they were going to kick this ball, because if they could have tied it up, because that, and that was the only, we'll go, you know, play quarter by quarter here in a little bit, but that was the only drive in the second half where they had real momentum to the point that they were within striking distance to score, really, other than that first drive where, of course, it totally made sense. 4th and 2, 4th and 3 early in the second half. Your offense was just rolling in the first half. Of course, you go for that. But late in the game, you had just given up 17 points. You haven't put up points all half. You could have had 3 to tie the game instead of putting yourself in a situation where, man, the 49ers have all the momentum. They're going to have good field position if we don't get this. And then what happened? They got 7. Now it's a 2-possession game, and then everything else happens. All that said, just because I wouldn't have done it, I would have kicked it. And again, everybody would have their own feeling about how they feel about that kicker in that moment. That said, that is not why they lost. Absolutely, Ben. Just like how I feel about like refereeing, right, and calling one play in the fourth quarter and being like, that was why we lost the game. Nah, man, I have the list here of all the drops that Josh Reynolds had on key plays, a drop by J-Mo in the end zone, certain play calls throughout, certain sequencing of plays throughout the second half I didn't like. I could point to 6 or 7 things before I got to that decision being the reason they lost. Just because I disagreed with the decision, it's not why they lost. Ronan, how did you feel about that sequence? How do you feel about Dan Campbell coming out of this game?
Simon, I'm relatively in the same boat as you. As it went to fourth down, in my head, it was an absolute field goal situation. Like you said, they hadn't had any momentum in that second half, really, up until that point. You have the chance to tie the game, right? It's not like there's, if it's the regular season, honestly, yeah, I understand going for it. But this might be your last game of this season, right? You're one win away from the Super Bowl, something unheard of 2 years ago for this team. And I understand that the aggressive thing is kind of your brand, right? But there has to be a line where you have to factor in a little bit of reason, man, because you have the chance to tie up the game and then it's 0-0. You've got, I don't know the exact time up, but you've got time to get a possession, right? And let's say they go down the field and score. You still have the chance to go down the field, score, and then go for two, right? So, and that's something that they've done all season long. But to go for it on fourth down there, I think was an unfortunate decision. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Simon. I would have kicked it, but I also believe that it's definitely not on Dan Campbell's shoulders for this loss, right? I think he plays some part in it, just as everybody else on the roster does, because it's a team loss. I don't think there's one thing you can really point to other than the list of mishaps that happened, like the drops and the fumble. I think it just an unfortunate end for this team, right? They had the big, I think, 17-point lead at half, and then to give it up, that's definitely a tough one for Campbell and his guys, Ben.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. And that's the point that I started out with, and I think one that we can at least all agree on is you get a long ways down the list before you start blaming Campbell for this, because, again, it was the Lions players ultimately who made so many unusual. These aren't just normal football mistakes. You've got 5, 6, 7, 8 mistakes or goofy plays that had to all go against you for you to lose, and they all did, and you lost because of that, not because of Campbell. I will go back, though, and we can talk about it some more, though. I actually love the decision here to go for it late in the game, because 3 points was not going to win this game. It was only going to tie it, and you knew you were going up against a 49ers offense that, while they looked clueless and hopelessly lost in the first half, they were untouchable in the second half. The Lions did almost nothing to stop them in the second half. This 49ers offense had it figured out. And for them to just decide that, hey, 27-27 on the road against a team that's got all the momentum, I thought it was going to come off as weak sauce. And I don't think the Lions players would have felt a very much bolt of energy about that, just kicking the field goal. They've gone for it all year. I think they expected to go for it. I think they would have been disappointed if Dan had not. And listen, we all, myself included, not you two, but me and the national media, if Dan Campbell had went conservative here in the second half with either of these, one of them, just one of them, if he had gone conservative here and the Lions lost, we all, myself included, would have been accusing Campbell of going against character, of tightening up, and of kind of losing it when the game was on the line here and of not being able to step up and make the big decision. And he made the big decision, and it's worked. I think they're 20 out of 25 this year, 80% clip on these fourth and shorts this year. It's a high percentage play for them. They failed to execute on both of these. Again, that's on the players, and I think Ben Johnson to an extent for that second fourth and short that they didn't convert on. And you mentioned Badgley. That's a kicker that none of us, unless you're the most avid football person or Lions fan, could have even said his name before this game started. Most people wouldn't have had a clue. And the reason is he's a journeyman kicker. He has flirted around 5 different teams in the NFL. Even his percentages, which aren't good, I think he's something like 37 out of 48 careers at 40 to 49-yard field goal range, which is okay, but it's not great. Most of that is in domes. This was not in the dome. And people say, well, listen, people make 48-yard field goals all the time in the NFL these days. They do, but not these two kickers, because Moody, the 49ers kicker, had also missed a 48-yarder just earlier in this game. So for Dan Campbell here to be taking the hottest offensive coordinator in football, who was untouchable in the first half, and an offense that the 49ers really couldn't stop for most of the game, that fumble notwithstanding and the punt right after it, that they hadn't been able to stop for most of the game, to take that ball away from them and give it to a journeyman kicker at 48 yards, I just couldn't see it in any way, shape, or form. Now, had it been 36 yards, 35, I would have said, still probably no. But I would have at least thought about it harder and longer. But for it to be that 48-yard distance, it was not a gimme. I mean, I don't know what the wind gusts were. They weren't strong, but I don't know after dark what it picked up to be. But we'd already seen a guy from the 49ers miss early in the game. I just wouldn't have done it. I liked what Campbell did here. Simon?
Yeah, I mean, Badgley only had in 7 total games, 4 regular season this year, 3 postseason with the Lions. He's only kicked 7 field goals in total with the team. So clearly, whether Campbell like thinks he's good or not, or is just like you said, Ben, I like that point of like, yeah, man, well, you're here because you need to be. We need someone to put up PATs and kick the ball off. So we'll use a field goal when it's advantageous. I mean, to end the first half, they took one. Which that, I mean, that one I found kind of interesting, but my thing here, and that's probably where the conversation ends, right? It was like, hey, I feel good about this kicker within this within this range. I think he nailed that 50 yarder against the Rams. Sorry, Ronan. But I forget what the exact situation there was. It might have, was that like end of half? So like it wouldn't have, you know, it wasn't the same kind of situation. Anyways, but he didn't have to do any major kicking last week in the Bucs game. And so I think it was just like a, we have a situation, red, green, for when we're going to use the kicker. That's a very clear divide. And we have a distance that's a very clear red, green. That said, when I think about like everyone that's saying the part of the argument that's like, it's what's got you here, it's what's got you here. I'm like, yes, doing that has gotten you to this point. And maybe I don't have as strong a constitution as people. But to me, I also try not to look at this game, which its ball literally is shaped in a way that you don't know how it's going to bounce. You never know how a game is going to bounce one way or another, right? So I believe in going for it, being aggressive, using your offense, trusting the math to get you to the doorstep, right? To get you here, get you to the NFC Championship game with, you have 8 minutes left, you have three timeouts, you can tie the game, you can put your defense back on the field where, hey, you can put your defense back on the field with three timeouts, you can tie the game, you're at the doorstep. The analytics have gotten you here, and I'm good with kicking the field goal. because you have, and maybe I don't know if I have superseded to the next level of football nerd, where I'm like, not only are analytics good, but special teams also matter, right? Or maybe I'm just not quite that good yet. But like, you got there, man. Just kick the ball. But yeah, if it was 45 yards, then Campbell probably looks at a sheet and it says 45 yards, go, or 45 yards, kick it. And then, you know, it's a 48 yards too far. Ronan, any closing thoughts for you on this one?
Because
I'm sure we want to actually talk about the game and not just gamble in the fourth down decision the whole time.
Yeah, I just hope that, Campbell, I hope people see that it wasn't all on Campbell, right? Ben, I think you made a good point on that it's on Ben Johnson as well. I know everybody loves giving him his flowers. Even on this podcast, I think we all have really liked him. We've talked really highly of him. But it's okay for an offensive-minded guy or offensive-minded coach to, you know, get stopped, right? They've had film of the Lions all season long. This is one of the, I know, you know, they're a little bit banged up right now, but this is still a top defense in the league. I know the run defense stats I don't think are very good at all. But, I mean, other than that, the pretty solid defense. I just hope the public perceptive doesn't change on Dan Campbell, because it's been a fun ride. It's been fun rooting for the Lions and waiting for the press conferences after, you know, hopefully we don't start making him the villain, because that would be unfortunate, Ben.
Yeah, and honestly, nobody should be the villain here. This happens. The 49ers were favored. They were at home. You knew that something was coming at some point. Once it did, everybody too acts like that 17-point lead halfway through the third quarter meant something. It means nothing of the past 5 years of NFL football. We've seen everybody from Jordan Love to Baker Mayfield to Patrick Mahomes, of course, get double-digit victories, come from behind victories in the fourth quarter, let alone midway through the third quarter. That 17-0 lead, or 17-point lead, just wouldn't have been a big deal for the 49ers to look at. They wouldn't have all of a sudden folded their tents here. So, you know, listen, if somebody's got to be blamed, you know, blame Jared Goff for a couple of missed wide open passes. Blame the kid Reynolds if you must for a couple of dropped passes. Blame Williams, Jamison Williams for the drop touchdown pass. Blame Jahmyr Gibbs for the crucial, critical fumble there in the third quarter. There's a lot of blame here on the players, and it happens if you must blame somebody before you get anywhere close to blaming Dan Campbell here. Before all of that, though, the Lions were smoking Simon in the first half. Ben Johnson was immaculate. He did nothing wrong in the first half until you get maybe, say, that fourth and, you know, not being able to convert first and seven. But that first half was amazing, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, it was everything. If you could have mapped out what a perfect opening script for the Lions offense would be, this was it. I mean, they scored on four of their first five possessions, right? Just getting a push at the line of scrimmage like they have all season, running to the outside, running up the middle. David Montgomery was chugging along. Jahmyr Gibbs was just like scooting, man. I mean, Gibbs' touchdown where he runs to the right side and he's just behind a sea of 49ers players and they're trying to like trap him like they're burglars from the 1950s in New York up against a brick wall alley, right? And he just like zips by all three of them. And then he gets to Fred Warner. And then he just hits another gear off of that juke to get in the end. Like, it's crazy stuff, man. So just like a perfect Lions offensive first half. Everything you could say for, and not just like, not like crazy stuff either. Not like, oh my God, like Jared Goff ran for an 80-yard touchdown. No, like stuff that was, hey, if the Lions were to have their perfect offensive half, what would it be? This was it. I mean, they get J-Mo on the end around, the 22-yard run. Like, figuring out how to utilize him if he's not going to be a consistent downfield wide receiver. That, like, beautiful. I love that. Get Penei Sewell out on the move. Frank Ragnow pulling. Taylor Decker pulling. Using that offensive line in a multitude of ways to create that run game. And then just, like, Goff, like, picking apart his own defense. I think Greg Olsen at one point in the game said the Niners were in zone for like over 75% of the game or something like that. And when you do that, and they didn't really turn up the pressure until the fourth quarter on Goff, and which paid off. And Goff has time to sit back there. Yeah, man, he's going to pick you apart. He's going to find the stuff. But it was based on the run game. So it was exactly what the Lions would have scripted in the first half. And then they get lucky. I mean, you look at how this game started out for the 49ers, and it's like every bad thing that could have happened, right? You get a good drive down the field, and you miss the field goal. And then you get your touchdown. Then on the next drive, you have the interception. You're losing possessions. You're losing points so consistently when this team on the other side of the field is off to such a hot start. It couldn't have started out any better for the Lions in this one, Ben.
Rona, when the game went to half, and we can talk more about the first half if you want, but when the game went to half and it's 24-7, what were you feeling at that particular moment?
Truthfully, Ben, I had some confidence in the Lions. I really thought that they were going to coast to the victory. I thought that, you know, they didn't really have any reason, or they didn't show any reason to think otherwise. You know, maybe the failed fourth down, but I mean, that happens. And whenever you score on four or five drives, you know, like no one's going to be too upset, especially whenever it's the NFC Championship. You're away in San Francisco, of all places. And another thing in that first half, that Detroit defense was playing good. That was a great showing in the first half. I don't exactly remember what the turning point was, Ben, but there was definitely a switch where I was like, oh, okay, here we go. It might be over.
That's actually a great question, because I actually think the turning point was the end of the first half. Not for us as fans, not for me, and not for Lions people, but for the 49ers to be able to get the Lions to settle for a field goal at the end of the first half. I will not make this case, but you can make the case that Campbell, in fact, was not aggressive enough by not going for that touchdown, the knockout blow, right at the end of the first half. If you're the 49ers, you have been beaten, bludgeoned, pushed around, manipulated, outcoached, outplayed, out everything the entire first half. You've had almost no breaks. And finally, you get this little teeny tiny break at the end of the first half where the Lions are knocking on the doorstep and they have to settle for a field goal. And you're thinking to yourself, if you're a 49ers guy, not any of the rest of us, because I'm like you, 49ers looked hopelessly lost in the first half. Shanahan looked blank and Purdy looked hopeless. I mean, that's how they looked walking out of there. But if you're a 49ers guy, Simon, I'm coming to you with this. If you're a 49ers guy, you got a little seed there right at the end of the first half. Like, okay, yes, we stopped them. We get the ball to start off the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, right? Like, you just like feel like you could take a breath when this team, you know, went touchdown, touchdown. One brief moment of clarity with a punt. touchdown, which, you know, five plays later became another interception touchdown. And then this really long drive. I mean, the drives for the Lions to start the game, four plays touchdown, 11 plays touchdown, seven plays punt, five plays touchdown, and then 17 plays, almost 5 minute long drive, and it ends in a field goal. Yeah, you feel pretty good about that going into the half. And like you said earlier, you know, you look up and you're like, 17 points, we get the ball first. All right, you know, we can do this. We knew what the holes were for the Lions offense or defense, I'm sorry, going into this game. And that is what ended up being their downfall, right? The deep passes. We'll talk about the IU catch at some point. And you knew, hey, the script that we needed to win this game is still available to us, right? We didn't need to win this game on a possession value, right? We didn't need to win it the way the Lions did, which was run the ball, have possession, keep the 49ers off the field. We could do this thing quick, right? We have that kind of offense, and all our guys are here and healthy and ready to go. So it was just, it kind of, if you were a 49ers truther at that time, you felt like, hey, my time is still coming right around the corner.
You have to feel like it. Roland, at what point, because you brought this up, it's something I was thinking about, but at what point did you have your first oh crap moment in the second half or even the first half where you're like, darn it, this may not end well for Detroit?
I think it would have been that first touchdown. I think it was it Ayuk in the second half?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was the Ayuk touchdown where I was like, oh no. Because, you know, the first possession, I think San Fran was held to a field goal, right, to make it 24 to 10. So you're thinking, all right, you know, 3 points, that's not going to win in the game. Detroit's going to go down the field, score here, and it's, you know, going to be the same lead that it was at halfway through the third quarter, and we're right back where we started. But that wasn't the case. And then San Fran went down the field, scored again. And it was a brand new ball game in my eyes, Ben.
Yeah, and for me, the seed planter was the end of the first half. When I saw the 49ers come out in that first play of the second half and be able to get the football to and I'm losing his name. Who's their all everything running back, slot receiver? No,
Debo,
the running back. Yeah, Debo. So when they got the ball to Debo in the second half. On that first drive, when they started doing that, that was a signal that, hey, something has changed right here. But I didn't feel the energy change until that fumble, the Jahmyr Gibbs fumble. That was when I was like, darn it, this may go sideways on Detroit. Because up until then, everything was just like, okay, the 49ers have a chance, Niners have a chance, but the Lions are in control of this thing. And when that happened, I felt like everything at that point totally changed. And that was my first oh crap moment for the Detroit Lions. Simon?
Yeah, 100%. It was absolutely the fun. Because on the Lions' first possession, the turnover on downs, at that point, the Josh Reynolds drop was kind of an aberration. You kind of explained it away a little bit, right? I mentioned first half the Niners weren't really bringing that much pressure on Goff. Second half, they started to do it a little bit. Really turn it on the fourth quarter, but that was the first play, that fourth down and fourth and two, 7 minutes to go in the third quarter, where it really felt like the blitz affected Goff. He had to move in the pocket. He's bad at that. And he throws a ball to Reynolds that's a little low, a little behind, but Reynolds gets two hands on it and drops it. And you're like, okay, this is fine, right? We march right down the field. It's our first bad play. They really haven't gotten to Goff too much this game. Probably won't keep happening. But then the Niners go right down and score. You have the fumble. I mean, when they fumbled it with five minutes to go, we're talking about 2 minutes of game time, right? The 49ers have already scored a touchdown, and the Lions are giving it back to them at the 25-yard line. I was like, it's a tie ball game, right? I mean, nobody in the world watching this game thought the Niners weren't going to get a touchdown after that. And then going into – which one was it? When the – Niners kicked off after that one, and then the Lions had the ball where they ended up getting a three down and punting it. Greg Olsen, as the ball is being kicked off, says, here's where we're going to find out what the Lions are made of. And no Lions fan has ever liked hearing that at a kickoff. Normally it's like has been the opening kickoff of the game, and then it goes south from there, right, over the last like 10 to 20 years. here it's in the second half of the NFC Championship game, and no Lions fan felt good about that. They're just like, oh man, all of the, like 50 years of bad luck is just like coming back in my mind. So yeah, that definitely the fumble what was turned. And by the way, what surprised me kind of looking back at it, and I have some more stuff on the personnel for the second half here, that was the last run play for Jahmyr Gibbs in this game. So you talk about Jahmyr Gibbs and how big of an impact he's had on this team, how he's been so important to this team all year, what he did throughout the game. I think he had 11 carries on the game, 12 carries on the game. His only carry in the second half was that fumble. So whether then it's intentional or not, right? Talk about like living in your fears, getting scared. If you're like, we can't hand the ball off to Gibbs anymore, and you decide that halfway through the third quarter, and this guy's been one of your most important weapons all season. Yeah, I mean, if we knew then that Gibbs wasn't getting another handoff, we would have been like, yeah, they're definitely toast if they can't hand the ball off to this guy anymore, because that's tough.
Yeah, it's a good point. And this was another thing. I heard some podcast folks today talk about how the Lions got away from the running game in the second half and was working so beautifully in the first, but that really wasn't the case. You mentioned that opening drive of the second half for the Detroit Lions. They ran the football successfully four or five times. It just didn't result in a touchdown, but it was very successful. Then you had the Jahmyr Gibbs fumble. By the time they get the ball back, it's tied at 24, and then they do a quick three and out, on which they actually handed the ball off again to Montgomery on the three and out. So all heck had broken loose by that point. You really couldn't, once you're down 27-24, fourth quarter, you really can't get back to the running game at that point, because the 49ers have all the energy. They're focused on the running game to try to slow that down somewhat, which they did a little bit better in the second half than the first, and the crowd is into it. So you really can't get back too much once you're down 27-24 to that running game that worked so well for you in the first half, because now you're behind, the crowd's into it, you're on the road. You really can't get back to it the way you could, but they did try to do that in the second half up until the fumble. Simon?
See, I don't agree. This team has gone against the grain so much with that, right? They run the ball more than any team in the NFL on third and passing situations. So third and long, like third and seven plus, whatever the exact yardage is. They had a handoff, a shotgun handoff to Gibbs on a third and 12 in the first half and converted, right? This is a team that doesn't care about that. And if you want to talk about like being aggressive and going for it on fourth down, do what got you here, right? They're running backs. They're two running backs, Montgomery and Gibbs. Seven of their 26 carries happened in the second half. And normally when you talk about like dominating game script and when you have to go for go to the pass more than the run, that's like you're down by like two possessions or something. This was a one possession game all through the second half, except for that touchdown that the Niners got after the do we or do we not go for a field goal, right? So the Lions, I mean, in my opinion, and yeah, I mean, the Niners did a better job of trying to stuff the run here, but in the second half. But again, what have the Lions been good at all year? Running in different ways, right? If you can't run to Sewell anymore on the right side, go run to Decker over there on the left side. If your pin and pull stuff with Frank Ragnow isn't working, go with some duo blocks on the right side with Ragnow and Glasgow there. I mean, there were so many other ways they could have continued to use the running game. And I really wish they had done that. And more than going away from the running game, they were forced to, I think this one was more indicative of the Niners defense. They were forced to go away from their main playmaker, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, in this game, Amon-Ra had 7 catches on 11 targets for 87 yards. In the second half, only 2 catches on 4 targets. So we went from 5 catches on 7 targets in the first half to 2 catches on 4 targets in the second half. Only 14 yards in the second half. Sam Laporta was about 50-50 in his distribution between the first and second half. So they really, because they stopped handing the ball to Gibbs, they eventually had to stop handing the ball to Montgomery. They weren't getting passes to Amon-Ra anymore. In the second half, they had to go to the secondary guys. All of Jameson Williams' targets in this game were in the fourth quarter. 3 of Josh Reynolds' 4 targets were in the second half. The Niners did do a good job. If you want to give them whatever you want to give them credit for defensively, the best thing they did was in the second half, they took the Lions out of their game. And I don't, this is where I think you're right, Ben. I don't think it was just game script stuff. I think it was stuff the Niners were doing, because all of a sudden, Goff couldn't target Amon-Ra anymore, right? All of a sudden, they weren't handing the ball off to Gibbs. All of a sudden, they had to stop handing it to Montgomery. It was – they went from going with Laporta, Gibbs, Montgomery, and Amon-Ra in the first half, which is like their Mount Rushmore of offense this year, to Jameson Williams, Josh Reynolds, and Sam Laporta. And that's not – that's not where you want your offensive distribution to be going, because Reynolds had two drops on the four targets. James Williams had one really nice catch on the right sideline, that tip ball that was a little behind, but he drops the touchdown that was just like a dime, just like in the breadbasket by Goff, man. Perfectly thrown away from the two defenders right there in the end zone. And it just like a cat trying to catch a basketball, just like right between the arms of J-Mo there. Just like the Niners forced the Lions to go to their secondary and tertiary offensive weapons, and it that's what ended up hurting the Lions in this one, Ben.
I hear you, but I'm not there. There's no way you can hand the football off once you're down 27-24 and all the emotion is gone out of the building, because the running game gets easier to stop as the defense gets more amped up. And if you go down first – let's say first and 10, you run the ball, you get 1 yard. Now all of a sudden you're behind the chains against a defense with a lead that knows how to get to the quarterback, and they don't care if you run the ball on second and third down at that point. They get that's the ideal defensive look, right? So it changes later in the game you get. It doesn't have to be a double-digit lead. When you've got the defense, that defense right there that can get after the quarterback when they really want to, they can get there. And with all the momentum and with the crowd into it, I don't see how you can go back to the running game, at least not to the extent that they were earlier in the game. I wouldn't have done it. I know some people would have, but I just wouldn't have, because, again, all it takes is one play and you're sitting at second and nine. And then all of a sudden now the edges can come. They don't have to worry about anything else that you're going to do. But the Lions did get away from their bread and butter when it came to Amon-Ra St. Brown. The 49ers, you could see it on the fourth down plays, where the 49ers, whether successfully or not, they were really trying to cover up all that mesh stuff underneath. They made Goff go farther out on those plays than he really wanted to, because they were purposely, with those great linebackers, taking away all that mesh stuff underneath. Ronan, any more thoughts here on the Lions and 49ers game?
I do want to talk a little bit about the 49ers, right? Lots of Lions talk.
Good idea. 49ers won the game, Purdy, by the way.
Yeah, 49ers won. I don't know. I think we might have mentioned that at some point. But Brock Purdy, I do want to kind of give him some flowers here. It wasn't a perfect game by any means. I'm not going to sit here and pound the drum that he's top five or anything, but that was a very good second half by Brock Purdy, using his legs, both, rushing and just getting outside of the pocket and extending plays. He was doing things that, we see some of these top quarterbacks doing. So I think he's broken the game manager mold for now. I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on that, because it seems like he's got a little bit more. He's, there were a couple balls where he had that gunslinger mentality, and, some quarterbacks wouldn't have made the throws that he did. And more often than not, it worked out for him, Ben.
Yeah, he's earned my respect. Now, listen, he gets sheltered in that system. And there were even a couple of god-awful, ugly throw-up throws that probably should have been picked off in that game, and he would have been the GOAT coming out. But having said that, his ability to make plays with his feet when it had to be done against athletes who are all better than he is from an athletic standpoint, and then for him to be able to make pinpoint passes time after time after time within that system, not everybody can do that. There are quarterbacks in the league who can't do that. He can. So he's the guy he's the right guy for right now for the 49ers. I'll put it that way, Simon.
Yeah, when Purdy became the starter last year, I don't think we ever had the conversation about game manager or not. We went straight to like, is he just good at football or not? I never saw him as a game manager, because I always thought he was too reckless. Anyways, when he started last year, he immediately was he would snap the ball, and then half the time he was holding on to it too long, and he was rolling out to the left, and he was trying to extend the play and take a deep shot. And the issue was that his body couldn't catch what his body was trying to make a check out of. I don't know. But anyways, he couldn't do it. He wasn't athletic enough, right? So this year he's figured it out. The balance. I think the biggest improvement I've seen from Purdy this year is when he is trying to extend the play, he's much better in the – he does the, like, Joe Burrow, where he's gotten way better at moving within the pocket. And that's such an advantage. That's so good when you do – it also helps that he's, like, 6 foot, because he had a couple of those broken tackles where he just, like, kind of ducked and, like – the defensive lineman who's like 6'7" just like kind of like goes over top of him. It's like diving under a wave at the ocean. And when he moves within the pocket and stays there, now you're just trying to navigate the 280-pound dudes instead of getting on the outside trying to navigate the 230-pound linebackers who are twice as fast as you. And it worked. So I never saw him as a game manager. I think he's always been a playmaker. It was just about how good could he be at it. And he definitely did a good job. I mean, the Brand, it's time, man. The Brandon Ayuk play. I mean, you talk about like both ends of that, right? Making a play, taking a risk, being protected by the skill set and the system that there was only one corner back there with Ayuk. And then the luck of what the Lions are showing out there in their defensive backfield. I mean, you've got a decent, you've got a good CB2 in Cam Sutton, not a guy who's going to take on your A1 alpha level wide receivers. You've got a good nickel corner in Brian Branch. You've got a somehow Ife Melifonwu has turned into this like blitzing box safety. I don't know when that happened in his career arc, but he did it and he's like pretty good at it. But you've got dudes that are like meant to be possession style, close to the line of scrimmage DBs. You don't really have that guy that's back there to prevent those plays. Instead, you've got poor Kendall Vildor trying to play one-on-one with Ayuk deep. And that's just not – that ain't going to work, man. That's not going to happen the way you want it to happen. You end up taking a ball off your face and give up a 51-yard pass. And just – yeah, I mean, the original question was Brock Purdy. Is he good or not? He's good, and he's not a game manager. The legs, right? The reason he was able to do that was the Lions, because of that pass defense, right? What they've been trying to figure out with this pass defense all year, they've had select games where they've gone man-to-man, but they're primarily a zone team trying to cover up their bases back there. A little like when we talked about the Packers-Niners game just last week. Oh, no, the Packers-Cowboys game. When, you know, you go man when you're trying to help your pass rush get home, right? You get those corners to jam up those receivers a little bit, throw off the timing just enough, and you're trying to get Aiden Hutchinson, Aleem McNeil, John Kaminsky, my boy Tyson Alualu still playing football. Try to get those guys to the quarterback by jamming up those receivers a little bit. So they went man-to-man a lot. And the adjustment the 49ers made in the second half was – Brock Purdy was just like, oh, look, there's just 20 yards down the field because no one's leaving a spy in for me. I'm Brock Purdy. That's not a thing. So let me rip off 3 to 4, you know, huge chunk runs and get this offense really going again. It was great adjustments on both sides of the ball from the Niners. It was good play by Purdy, especially in the second half. And those Niners pass catchers, man, they made plays. I mean, that Kyle Juszczyk catch on the sideline was just sick. I mean, the dude looked like, if that's not recreated into some sort of like, I don't know, commercial for something where he's just like perfectly holding himself, like in that tiptoe, I'm catching the ball on the sideline pose for 3 seconds before I even get the ball. And then I have the ball for 3 seconds and then I fall. Like, he's got to make that into a commercial for his wife's business, making the jackets for NFL family that she's been making. I don't know, man. Just like, and George Kittle gets the big catch along the left side. Really good adjustment. Really good stuff going against the Lions DBs who were certainly outmatched in this one, Ben.
All right, Ronan, anything else on this game, man?
I don't think so. I'm excited to do our Super Bowl preview, but before we do that, we have to head to the Chiefs game.
All right, let's do it, man. So the Chiefs beat the Ravens 17-10. Simon, I'm going to give you first shot on this one, man. What's your first take on this?
Boy, oh boy, was that first quarter fun just for watching quarterbacks do quarterback things, man. I mean, just sick stuff. I think I had of all of championship weekend, and we just talked for 45 minutes on Lions 49ers. I think the most fun I had was just watching that first quarter of Ravens Chiefs. Just ridiculous things made by two top five quarterbacks. Going from that, and I know the last three quarters, it was a defensive matchup the rest of the way, but going from that quarterback play to Purdy versus Goff was a reminder of like what you have to do in the AFC versus what you got to do in the NFC. I'd be looking for some, you know, realignment of divisions if I'm a couple AFC teams, probably. Look, I know everyone's given Lamar a hard time for the amount of completions he had, for his pocket presence in this one, the interception. But man, that play, that Zay Flowers touchdown, where he scrambles away from what felt like the entire Chiefs defense and just throws that bomb, was just incredible. And then Patrick Mahomes is just picking apart this incredible Ravens defense for the first two drives. Travis Kelce, you guys remember I was tracking head coaches and facial hair throughout the year? Well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch, I forget what the name of the Kelce brother podcast is, but I'm going to go back and track the videos from when Kelce started growing that beard back out, because I think he started playing like a dog again when that happened. I mean, he's out there like messing with Justin Tucker before the game even starts. He's blocking. I've never seen Travis Kelce block for that long throughout a game. He's talking trash to people. He's beating Kyle Hamilton one-on-one. Dude grew his beard back out and just like became a monster again. So I loved that. It was an incredible first quarter, Ben. I loved it.
Roland, first thoughts on the game, man?
Same as Simon, man. That first quarter was a great offensive kind of explosion, and then it just kind of all went downhill if you're an offensive fan, and skyrocketed if you love the defense, because they were playing some very physical defense. These two teams, before the game they were chirpy, during the game they were chirpy. These two teams did not like each other. And Ben, I don't want to bring it in too early, but it costed the Ravens. This isn't a, you know, the refs screwed over Ravens conversation, I don't think. The Ravens just kind of, I think they let their emotions get the best of themselves, because they had a lot of penalty yards, Ben.
Yeah, fair enough. I've got all kinds of things that we can hit the Ravens for here. I don't necessarily, I'm not going to take too hard a hit on Lamar. I think Simon's got some stuff on the Ravens offense. I'm going to take a hard hit here on the Ravens defense. And I know people are going to say, wait a second, they just gave up 17 points to Patrick Mahomes. I didn't like, and I don't know who made this decision between John Harbaugh, the coach, versus Mike McDonald, the all-everything hottest defensive coordinator in football. I don't know who made the decision. But the decision to come out in your typical two-deep safety look for the entire first half. I watched the entire first half in detail. To come out with two safeties and to put Kyle Hamilton on Travis Kelce, I didn't like either decision. Now, again, that's the kind of stuff they've done all year, but this was not the game where they needed to do that. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have had a pedestrian offense for most of the year. They've illustrated that they really cannot consistently beat you deep. And I would much rather have had the Ravens get aggressive at home with the better defense, with the more athletic defense, against really an overmatched group of receivers here for Kansas City, on top of which they didn't have Joe Tooney. I wish the Ravens had gotten a lot more aggressive in the first half, because when they didn't, when they basically sat back in their two deep, and they've got Kyle Hamilton, their best, most flexible defensive player, locked in on Travis Kelce for most of the game, not all, but most of it, you've really kind of limited and boxed yourself in, and you've really kind of told yourself, hey, we're going to stop Kelce, which they didn't, and we're going to kind of keep everything in front of us, which Patrick Mahomes was happy to do. He illustrated last year he has no problem taking all the underneath stuff. And Andy Reid, for the past 25 years, has illustrated that he loves taking all the underneath stuff. It's his favorite play in the playbook. So for the Ravens really to come out here with what I thought was just a bland defensive look in the first half, it really allowed the Chiefs to get ahead, to score. Patrick Mahomes was able to nickel and dime his way up the field with all kinds of underneath stuff. They got ahead and they controlled the rest of the game. They could have scored more than 17 points had they needed to, had they really gotten risky and aggressive in the second half, but they didn't need to. It really set the tone here, so I didn't like it. I did not like the game plan. And again, I realized the defense was very good. It was very physical. It's been good all year. And they only gave up 17 points, but it allowed Kansas City and Mahomes to get out to a quick lead here. And I know they were expecting Lamar to score points, and it didn't. And they were expecting their new offensive coordinator to mastermind a game plan that worked, and he didn't. And maybe it didn't matter. Maybe Mahomes wins anyway. But that's where I was at on that. Simon, feel free to take us up on the defensive side or switch over to the offensive side here for Baltimore.
Yeah, I'll switch the offense side. I will say I was really excited for the Kyle Hamilton, Travis Kelce showdown that I thought we were going to get after that first touchdown. And yeah, I mean, Kelce just owned everything that they put against him. I didn't love 6 combined carries by running backs in this game. I think Gus Edwards only had 2 carries in the second half. He had 3 carries for 20 yards. I mean, it was successful when they did it against a Chiefs offense that was not that good against the run this year. I mean, there's such a good pass defense with those corners, with the pass rush they can generate. George Karloftis looks like such a dude right now. That's I love that. That's so much fun. This Ravens team, I know I personally, and I've said it on this podcast, got very excited by how well they were mixing the run and the pass this year and being able to go to the pass when they needed to. And I do. I love that. But this Chiefs team ranked 18th in rushing yards allowed, and their advanced metrics against the run are even worse because obviously game scripts and all sorts of stuff. But this Ravens team, first in rush attempts on the season, first in rushing yards, fourth in rushing touchdown, third in yards per rush attempt. They average 30 rush attempts per game, and Lamar only accounts for, I think, like 8 of those. So you're talking about like 22 rushes a game has been your go-to, right? You won the Texas game on the back of 229 rushing yards, right? The 160 yards against the Dolphins in that week 17 game, 251 rushing yards against the Jaguars in that week 15 game. This offense is built through running the ball and not just running it with Lamar. Again, he's averaging 8 carries a game, and that's what he had in this one. He had his 8 carries. So where was everything else? Why 37 pass attempts? Again, maybe Ben will feel differently about this based on the score in the Lions-Niners game. But this was a 1-2 possession game this entire time. You know, Lamar took 4 sacks in this one. He was not comfortable in the pocket at all unless it was a true designed run. And I know, like I said, he had the highlight play in the first quarter. But for the last 3 quarters, when that Chiefs defense was just lights out and getting so much pressure, and your receivers aren't getting anything going, right? Zay Flowers obviously had, you know, another incredible game up until that fumble. But I mean, your next best pass catcher in that game was Justice Hill on a couple throws out to the flat. How do you not get the run game going? And how is that not part of the like opening script, right? The start of the game. I thought it was tough. I would have liked to have seen them run the ball more with the running backs, be balanced, get everything again. Like, what got you here, right? To that conversation we've been having, what got this team here? And it was a bummer to see. It's not like the Chiefs really looked like they came out and were prepared to stop I mean, they looked like they've looked all season, and the Ravens did not find a way to take advantage, Ben.
No, I 100% agree. I didn't know if that's where you were going to go or not, but I totally agree here that no matter how good your quarterback is, you have to help him out. So you can't just ask Lamar to go out here and torch maybe the best secondary in football, who's been good all year long and has shown no signs of relenting against anybody. You really needed to go with the running game to just loosen things up. You know Lamar is going to make some plays that are just going to be eyeball popping. You got to loosen it up. And as soon as you're successfully running the football, you're going to suck the linebackers in a little bit. You may suck a safety in a little bit. And now Lamar has a defense that's a little bit looser, and now he can go to town and work all of his stuff, and it never happened. And Lamar's left here trying to do basically everything. And as amazing as he is, and he is, and this wasn't his best game, yet you're asking too much of him, especially, man, they haven't had a – man, this is the – I think – is this the first time he's ever been in the AFC title game? Whether it is or not, I can't remember, but he's not used to being in the games quite this big anyway. And for him to be here – it's the first time the Ravens have been at home for one of these things in forever. I mean, I think decades since the Ravens have had a home AFC title game. Surprisingly, they made their runs through the wild card or the lower seed path. So for him to be doing all that, and you know the monkey's on his back, You got to set him up for success, and I don't think that they did it. Ronan?
No, I completely agree with you guys. That was going to be my next point. I would have loved to see the Ravens turn to the run. There was no reason not to. Simon, you mentioned it. It was a 1-2 score game all throughout the game. Go back to what you're good at. This team is pretty much built on the run, right? Lamar is a threat himself. You factor in there's another running back on the field. Use that a couple of times, then defenses think and run. That's whenever you start throwing bombs. They had Lamar drop back too many times, and I think the play calling was ultimately what lost them the game. That mixed with what I mentioned earlier, they just kept shooting themselves in the foot. I think 95 yards on just penalties, so almost the entire football field. Not great, Ben.
No, it's a fair point, Ronan. I glossed over it on my way to race and talk about Mike McDonald and his decision there. It's a fair point about the penalties because you are hurting yourself. And it's one thing to have aggressive penalties where you're getting sacks and maybe an interception. And Mahomes is feeling a little shook up and rattled, but that's not what was going on here. These were just, you know, stupid penalties, I'll put it that way. These were penalties that just didn't make sense and just added on to the burden you already bore of trying to beat a good Kansas City defense here. Simon, what else you got on this game, man?
I mean, not a lot, man. It was fun. It was fun the second half seeing these defenses. I mean, the Chiefs didn't score in the second half, guys. I mean, it was right. Just and they didn't turn the ball over either, right? Ron talked about shooting themselves in the foot. The Chiefs weren't going to walk into this game and mess themselves up. It was like watching the Warriors win the championship a year ago or 2 years ago now. They're just going to show up and maybe they're not that A1 level of what they were, their peak of what they were 3 years ago, but they've been here before. And you said it, Ben, like Lamar hasn't been here before, which is crazy because he's so talented, but the AFC's so tough and the Greg Roman years and the health stuff with the yada, 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 all the reasons the Ravens haven't been here before. So he's getting on his learning curve now, which makes sense. The Chiefs have been here. We talked last week about how this is another new iteration of this team that's defense first. And what's Mahomes going to do? Okay. I'm going to hit Travis Kelce. Kelce was like 10 for 10, to like when 10 receptions on 10 targets, 102 yards and a touchdown after like the first drive of the third quarter, I think. Just like bread and butter, automatic, right? I've loved how the Chiefs, I'll have to look at this at some point, but have just like narrowed the tree of like what they're doing in every game, right? We had Sky Moore early on. We had Justin Watson early on in the year, Noah Gray early on in the year. Kadarius Toney's like on Instagram Live right now. He's not in football games anymore. Congratulations on the birth of your daughter though, Kadarius. It's like Mahomes walks in with his offensive line, Travis Kelce, Isaiah Pacheco, and Rashee Rice. And that's it. He's like, these are my guys, right? They spent all year, right? We wanted them to be this electric offense in week four, like they were 2-3 years ago. Nah, man, they're not worried about that, all that. They're the Miami Heat from last year and this year, quite frankly. We don't need any of that winning stuff. Just tell us we're going to be the underdog for three straight games. Okay, whatever, man. We've been here before. We're going to take the year to figure out what we are, figure out who we can trust, figure out who we can go to in the big moment. And then when the playoffs come around, we'll know the three guys, and we've got 15 back there, and we're good to go. And that's all this was. And, you know, we have 2 weeks to prepare for the Super Bowl, but that's a lot of what I think the Super Bowl matchup is going to look like. We're going to get Pacheco runs up the middle. We're going to get Travis Kelce key third downs and some trash talk. And we're going to get Rashee Rice explosive plays on screen passes. And then Mahomes running around like he's holding an open drink at a party. And it's inevitable. It's Thanos.
Simon, you make a great point about Kansas City because you were one of the few people who were still saying, hey, Kansas City is dangerous when they were losing all those games. I had basically gotten off the bandwagon. Most people had, hey, it's just not their year. And you weren't just saying, hey, they could win a playoff game. You were saying they could win the Super Bowl. You were still on them. You stayed with them. So hats off to you for that. I'm going to take one parting shot real quick here on the Ravens before I give one shout out to a Chiefs player. The Baltimore Ravens here, It felt like on offense and defense, the one thing I can say across the board is they never made Kansas City uncomfortable. They never made Kansas City have to reach beyond themselves. They never made Kansas City have to do anything abnormal or aggressive or risky at any point on offense or defense. It almost felt like they just felt like that they were the better team. They were going to come in and do what they do and be who they were. And guess what? It's not good enough. When you're going up against Andy Reid and Mahomes, you have to make them uncomfortable. The Ravens never did that at any point on offense or defense. So hats off to the Chiefs. Legarius Sneed. I've just got to give a shout out to this guy. I think everybody knows the play where he knocked the fumble off Zay Flowers' hands at the goal line. Huge, massive play. Because if he doesn't make that, now all of a sudden it's a close game, and now the Chiefs are uncomfortable, and now the crowd is back in it, and now Lamar gets a chance maybe to work some of his unbelievable, insane athletic magic. And it never happened because of Legarius Sneed's heads up play. But he had another one early in the first half, which almost didn't even count because the Ravens scored a touchdown. But Lamar Jackson on that fourth down play where the Ravens decided to go for it in the first half breaks through the line and looks like he is off to the races. Mm-hmm. He never quite gets to full speed. He stumbles just a little bit coming out of the gate like a horse. But you just know, oh my gosh, he's about to go 70 yards for a touchdown and we are all just going to be standing and hooting and hollering. But it's Legarius Sneed. Sneed is the guy who's athletic and fast enough to get over and actually stop Lamar from scoring the touchdown. Now, the Ravens eventually would score a touchdown there, so it almost got forgotten. But hats off to Sneed, who is in his own right an unbelievable athlete who can go safety, slot corner, outside corner, anything you need him to do. He's good against the run, out on the flat. He's good at pass coverage. He has just grown and become an unbelievable stalwart in that secondary, just absolutely phenomenal. Simon, anything else you'd like to shout out from this game before we move on?
I love Legarius Sneed, man. Dude's about to get paid. Like paid. Like, go look it over the cap and sort the corners, average annual value, and like just look at the top because that's where Sneed's about to be. I can't wait.
All right. Well, those are the two games. We've got some news to get to, and we'll do it right after this break.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by BoxScore Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes. And that's Tricky with two I's.
Welcome back, everybody. And we do encourage you to please listen to all of our other sister podcasts out there. In news this week, rather large news, the Chargers hire Jim Harbaugh to be their head coach. Not a surprise. That was on track for several weeks, months even, at least according to rumors. They also bring over some of their staff from Michigan. No surprise there. They are finalizing a deal with Ravens director of player personnel Joe Horitz to be a general manager. Not a huge surprise. We had also heard rumors that Harbaugh might raid his brother's staff a little bit in terms of up or down the ladder. So no huge surprises there. And I think most people, Simon, like the hire. So you feel free to tell us whether you like it or not, but is this what you absolutely would have done, and is this what you think Harbaugh should have done?
Easily what Harbaugh should have done. The Chargers, I think, should have been the number one job on every coach's board. I mean, go coach Justin Herbert. There's no better situation you can go to when you're going to a team that has fired a coach to have a top five quarterback. So absolutely the right move for Harbaugh. It's probably the right move for the Chargers because you get – that culture reset that the team needs, plus a guy who can work with quarterbacks and maybe unlock another level of Herbert, maybe give him a little bit of an FU attitude and start even slinging the ball around even a little more, right? Not looking for the perfect opportunity because he's the Mr. Perfect quarterback, which I say lovingly, I don't say with any disparage in my heart. So I love it. I'm into it. I needed a culture setter, number one, with the Chargers. I might have preferred somebody to really hit the defensive side of the ball a little bit harder, a Belichick of Vrabel, right? I guess I'm a little worried if Harbaugh will lean back on his college days and be like, ooh, Joey Bosa, I love that guy. Let's keep him around. Oh, I remember Khalil Mack. He was with the Bears when I was with the Niners. I'm a little worried about that. I feel good about him bringing over someone from the Ravens front office. Maybe he comes in and guts the team a little bit. I would have liked Vrabel and even Belichick a little more for the aspect of what I think they need to do with the cap and cut the defensive guys and coach up a bunch of young dudes. But we'll see what happens there. But at the end of the day, they needed culture and they needed a guy for Herbert. And I think Harbaugh gives you both those things.
It's a fair point. I do think Vrabel and Belichick both would have worked here too, because you've got your quarterback's needs supplied, which those guys seem to need, and they would have fixed that defense, and they would have had no problem getting rid of expensive, overpriced, aging players who they weren't winning with anyway. So I think both of those guys would have worked. Ronan, just about everybody agrees this was good for Harbaugh, because, oh, by the way, even though they're throwing brink loads of trucks worth of money at him back at Michigan, he had an NCAA investigation breathing down his neck. He just won the national title. There's really no reason to stay here at Michigan, so I think everybody likes that. But do you like Harbaugh here at the Chargers, or would you have pulled somebody else in?
I do, and I understand the Chargers' perspective. I mean, obviously, you know, Harbaugh is one of those top-tier coaches. But I think the guys that Simon just mentioned, like a Belichick, like a Vrabel, would have been a very good candidate as well. I think, you know, maybe the Chargers feel a little bit jaded towards defensive-minded head coaches, right? You just saw what happened with Staley. Now, obviously, Staley is no Belichick or, you know, no Vrabel for, you know, that matter. But I think the last cycle that they were looking for a candidate, right? A lot of people, myself included, were hoping for an offensive minded guy to unlock Herbert, like you guys have been talking about. And you know, here we are year five, right? Four or five, wherever we are with Herbert. And we're kind of waiting for that extra, right? That playoff win, that big, you know, playoff run. We're still kind of waiting on it. And I think Harbaugh is probably the guy to unlock it if anybody's going to. I don't know how many other candidates really league-wide, right? You take away every coach, how many more guys you're taking over Harbaugh. But I think the Chargers are on a really great trajectory, bringing in the Ravens guy to be their GM. The Ravens have been a very successful franchise for years. Right, I don't know how long he's been with them, but he's been around good people, good organization, and it all boils down to what Simon's been talking about, culture. The Ravens have a culture. Michigan had a culture. The 49ers, whenever Harbaugh had a culture. Everyone that they're bringing in brings in a culture, and that's something to look forward to if you're a Chargers fan or even a Chargers player, Ben.
Yeah, and listen, your best point there was the fact that maybe they were burnt out on defensive coaches here when you look at what they've been bringing in the past. All right, so that's the Chargers. The Falcons hired Raheem Morris to be their head coach. Everybody, Simon, I'm coming to you first here. Everybody, and you've mentioned it, Raheem Morris is a guy you like. Ronan's mentioned it. This is a guy we like. And yet nobody really had him filling out one of these seats. Nobody on the national cycle. You and I did our own special four-hour YouTube episode when we talked about it. Nobody had him as actually catching a seat this year, and here he is. So how surprised were you? And what happened with Belichick? Did Belichick blow it, or did they just fall in love with Raheem Morris?
I've got no idea, Ben. And you know, It's Morris's time, right? And I think we said it on that YouTube channel, which is still good for anybody to go watch. But we're like, in a year where Belichick, Vrabel, and Carroll are available. Like, some of these secondary guys that would have normally gotten jobs just aren't going to get jobs. Well, Morris just, you know, I think he just straight up beat out Belichick. Now, I'm sure my guess would be it had to do with Belichick bringing all his own people and being in charge. I'm sure that's kind of where they ended up butting heads. I think from all the reports once Morris got hired was owner Arthur Blank was dead set on Belichick. And he, like, if he and he alone were making the decision, it would have been Belichick. But Morris was impressive enough in the interviews and had enough, not clout, like he didn't, well, I mean, clout based on him and who he is and his resume and how he was in the interviews. He won over enough fans in that Falcons front office, I think, over the course of the interviews, that enough of the football staff was able to get to Blank and say, this is our guy. Now, maybe that was just them saving their jobs, right? And being like, hey, don't bring in Belichick to, like, take over some of my job duties and then you eventually, you know, let me go. Maybe it was a little bit of Belichick saying, like, this is the – I'm bringing my coaching – I'm bringing in Patricia. I'm bringing in McDaniels. I'm bringing in Joe Judge. I would say it had something to do with that, right? Just the power, the gravitas that Belichick walks in with, whereas Raheem Morris is an opportunity to, like, grow within the team with everybody. And look, he brings his own guys. He brings his coaching staff. He brings Zach Robinson, who is one of the hot OC names from the Rams. He brings Jimmy Lake from the Rams to be the DC. If it had been a normal cycle, I would have given Raheem Morris a lot more attention, and I should have, I think, even with the other names that were in there. But Belichick only interviewing with this one team really just, like, threw me off, and I think threw a lot of people off, and we were sure of it. And I think it just came down to Morris won over enough people that weren't Arthur Blank to start, and then eventually – It's that charming person that seems too perfect, right, that you meet at work or school or something, and you're like, I don't want to like this guy. Like, gosh, man, everybody loves, like, blah, 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 all that stuff. And then you're just like, God dang it, man. I'm in. I love this guy. Whoever, like, let's go get this. And I think that's what Morris did. He just won everybody over. He's that good.
Say, Simon, I think you nailed it here. I absolutely think you covered all the bases. I think Arthur Blank wanted Belichick. I think he's known that for weeks, that that's who he wanted. It's obvious because they interviewed him twice and Belichick didn't interview anywhere else. I think Belichick wanted to be in Atlanta. And I think that most people were right when they said Belichick was interviewing Atlanta until he wasn't. And I think they already had, this is something I picked up by this little tidbit here that I picked up off of one of the podcasts that I listen to that entertain me all the time, is that Arthur Blank already has personnel people in the building that he likes. He does not want to get rid of them. He does not want Belichick coming in and pushing them out. He already liked them. He wanted Belichick the coach, not Belichick the general manager. So now he's starting to rethink everything. And then here's Raheem Morris. So, Ronan, I'm coming to you. We all know that Morris is the fantastic coordinator. We all know that he's well-liked and respected around the league. We all know that everybody from Jalen Ramsey to everybody's ever coached will swear that this guy should be a head coach in the NFL. But he's got a coaching record of 21-38. How much does that bother you? Because he had 3 years in Tampa already. It's been a lifetime ago. And then he caught that little interim stint, which hardly counts, with the Falcons, I think it was, back in the day. So 21-38 is not a pretty record. We all know we like him, but how much does that bother you coming in here?
It doesn't bother me too much, Ben. You know, I think coaching is one of those things where you learn, you know, pretty much by trial by fire. You've kind of got to get burnt and you learn from your mistakes to kind of become a great coach, right? I mean, you look at some of the greatest coaches, Andy Reid, I mean, right now is, you know, obviously a little bit up there in age and he's on fire because he's been around the league for a while. He knows what's worked for him and what hasn't. And I think obviously, you know, there's no clear-cut way to be successful in the league because we've seen guys like McVay step in right away and be successful. But I'm not too worried about it, Ben. He's you mentioned that he's loved around the league. I don't think culture will be an issue for this team. That's something – this team hasn't really had an identity for a long time, really since Shanahan was the OC, it seems like. They need something there. And you know what, if that's Raheem Morris, I think it can work for him. This wasn't the spot that I thought he would go to if he were to be hired. I thought this was going to be one of those Ben Johnson, Bill Belichick type of spots where it gets filled maybe a little bit later. But you know what? I the more I think about it, the more I like the hire. You know, I went all off season talking about how much I loved the moves they made defensively, and then they stepped up to an extent this year. I think they were a pretty solid team. Lots to be excited about. There were a lot of guys, everybody on Twitter and basically who has eyes knows that there are players on that offense not being used to their full potential. So I think, you know what, this who is Zach Robinson, Rams staff, I'm sure, well, I'm not sure, but I'm hoping that he can come in there and do a little bit more something than Arthur Smith, because unfortunately, you know, he did have that success under Vrabel in Tennessee, but wasn't really able to get that offense clicking in Atlanta, Ben.
Simon, Ronan mentioned it. So Raheem Morris brings over Zach Robinson as offensive coordinator and Jimmy Lake to be defensive coordinator. A lot of these are shot in the dark. You never really know for sure until you give a guy a chance. But would you have plugged anybody else in here to OCDC if you're Raheem?
I don't think so. So Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake go way back. They coached on the Bucks together in like 2007. And then they crossed paths again later with the Bucks while Raheem Morris. I think once he became the head coach for those couple years, I think he brought Jimmy Lake back to be the defensive backs coach. And then they coached together with the Rams this year. So he's got the history there. When you're hiring your coordinator to be on the same side of the ball as you, it's probably good, whether you want to be the play caller or not, to have somebody that you have a real relationship with, because then it's, you know, you're going to have a clear vision for that side of the ball. And Zach Robinson was one of my favorite OC candidates out there on the market this year. And I think probably of the guys that were actually like out there interviewing for multiple jobs, my number one guy. You know, Ken Dorsey really didn't interview that many places before going to Cleveland. I don't even remember his first name now because no one's interviewing him. I think Chris O'Hara is the Vikings QB coach. I'm waiting on that guy. That's my dark horse dude, but he hasn't interviewed anywhere. So he's not on anyone's radar yet. But of the guys actually interviewing multiple places, Zach Robinson was my favorite guy. Former quarterback, trained quarterbacks for the combine for a little while, worked at, I forget which, I forget if it was PFF or he worked at some analytics place for a little while, right? Grinding tape and stats on college quarterbacks, college prospects. And then eventually joining the McVay staff. So I love his background. I love that it's different. I love that it's not just this guy that's been working for the same NFL coaches for 10 to 15 years. I love that it's not a guy that's just been in the college. He's seen the world of the NFL from different angles. And most importantly, he's worked directly under McVay for a handful of years. So I really like both moves. I'm a little surprised it's not more branched out just because of Morris's like context and history around the league. But I mean, dude, go with the guys you've been with for the last couple of years here. Go with guys you have history with. Bring that Rams success over. So yeah, I'm happy with these moves.
Ben Johnson was the hot name for instead of as head coach. He got interviews with six teams. Nobody else had any more than Raheem Morris. There were a couple of guys who interviewed with five teams. So even though around the national circuit, people liked him and we liked him, he was not the hot name on this coaching cycle. And yet the teams who were actually looking, everybody looked at this guy except for one or two teams. Everybody was looking at Raheem Morris. So he's there. He's got the staff that Simon approves of, so we'll be looking at that. The Carolina Panthers, I think same day, just 2 hours apart, hired Dave Canales, offensive coordinator from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after a brilliant year with Baker Mayfield. Ronan, do you like the hire? If not, who else would you have put in here?
I don't hate it, Ben. I think this is one of those moves that you definitely could have waited a little bit just to see, because – I don't know. Bringing in, let's say, like a guy like Vrabel, I think would have been interesting, right? Now, offensively, you don't necessarily know if that would work, but you know, you can maybe bring in the right pieces around him and get Bryce Young back on track. So, with that being said, I do like that they've brought in a offensive coordinator that obviously has had success in years past, but most importantly with Baker Mayfield, right? First year as a starter in Tampa Bay, didn't have a whole lot of expectations, and he took him the playoffs. So I mean, that's definitely worth noting. That offense was surprisingly effective this season, I guess is a way to say it. So I don't hate the hire, Ben, but I definitely think this is something that you could have waited just to see. But you know what, if he comes in and has a plan for Bryce Young, and it's you would assume all of the candidates would have had a plan for Bryce Young. So I guess maybe he had the best one, or I guess the best one in Tepper's eyes, or whoever's calling the shots there. I'm somewhere in the middle, Ben. I won't keep rambling.
Thank you, Roman. So, Simon, I would have hired Eric Bieniemy for this job. They didn't interview him at all. They interviewed 12 other people. Belichick was not among them. Vrabel was among those. Do you like to hire quickly, but more importantly, if you don't, who would you really have wanted to see in this spot?
I didn't want to see anybody in this spot because I don't want to send anybody to work for David Tepper. So that's actually my quick answer. I don't like anybody for it. If I had to really pick somebody, I mean, maybe this would have been a good retread spot for Dan Quinn. That was my like official pick. But yeah, I honestly, truthfully did not really care who was going to coach the Panthers this year. I feel bad for the person. I feel bad for Canales. Here's where I was at on the Canales hire. I was a little bit nervous when it happened. Middle, like me, like blah, like whelmed, right? On the hire, just like the Dan Morgan hire that we talked about last week. Even though people only have amazing things to say about him, people that have met him personally and about him coaching and what he did with the Bucs this year. Here's why I'm nervous. He was only a coordinator for this 1 year in Tampa, and he was one of those quote-unquote lower-level targets this offseason, which makes sense for the Carolina job, right? We knew they weren't going to get the Belichick, the Vrabel, the probably not the Ben Johnson. No one wants to come work for Tepper. And it screams of, hey, he made Baker look good. Baker wasn't good when he was our quarterback, right? So let's hire that guy by David Tepper, right? That's a David Tepper thing. But here's what does give me optimism and why I ultimately do like the move. Canales and Morgan worked together in Seattle for 8 seasons from 2010 to 2017. So they have a good shared history between the two of them, and they did it on a team with a great culture and a great structure and a really good GM-coach relationship in Pete Carroll and John Schneider. So I was underwhelmed or whelmed by both of those hires, right? Last week I rambled for like 5 straight minutes on Dan Morgan and why I didn't love it. I was underwhelmed or whelmed by Dave Canales. So each individually I didn't love, but together I like it. I think it makes sense. And that to me is Dan Morgan coming in as the GM and his first official move being going to Tepper and saying, I want this guy to be the head coach. And that to me says, hey, maybe Morgan can really run these things. Maybe Morgan is really in charge a little bit. Having those two guys together, I think, creates a good foundation. For at least we're going to move in a positive direction. We work well together. We've worked together before. We saw how Carroll and Schneider worked together for all those years. It's not like they worked together. They passed by in 2 years with some random team. 2010 to 2017 Seattle, pretty good place to be and pretty good place to learn how to run a franchise. So those two moves combined, I feel pretty good about it. I don't know how it's going to work and look on the field, X's and O's and player development, all that. But in terms of a team direction, I think they're going to be aligned, and that's a great place to start, Ben.
See, I think both of you did a great job there of not just glossing this over as a great hire, because here's how it's being sold in Charlotte, just 2.5 hours from me. It's being sold as, hey, we got the guy we wanted. What they really have to say is, behind closed door, is we got the guy who we wanted after all the other candidates who weren't coming. We figured out that they weren't coming because they interviewed Todd Monken, but he's not coming here. He's going to stay there and work with Lamar. They interviewed Raheem Morris. He didn't have to come. They interviewed Mike Vrabel. I'm sure Vrabel thought about it for half a second and thought, you know what, I'll just sit out till next year. They interviewed Mike McDonald. There was no way in heck he was coming. They interviewed Bobby Slowick. There's no way in heck he's leaving C.J. Stroud to come over here and be head coach for Tepper after Bryce Young's rough first start. There's no way he's coming. Brian Callahan wasn't coming down here. And Ben Johnson sure as heck wasn't coming down here. So they interviewed 12 guys. I think 7 of them probably weren't coming at all, even though they might have thought about it for half a second. So I'm okay with the hire. The Morgan connection you mentioned, what makes a good foundation. At least he's shown he can work with Baker Mayfield and get something out of that. So it's as good probably as they could do. All things considered, I'm okay with it. Now, one final question for you guys before we shut this thing down. I've been saving this one, but it's a pretty good one, I think. I am pulling up the NFL standings right now, my other team here. We like most of these hires, but just looking at this one division, the NFC South, where you got the Falcons hiring Raheem Morris. The Panthers have hired Dave Canales. The Saints, the Buccaneers. 4 years from now, I don't want to know who's getting out first. How many of these four guys still have a job as head coach of this team 4 years from now? Because it's one thing to say, and I think we're right, that we like these hires. That's one thing. But it's quite another to put them in a losing franchise that doesn't have a quarterback when you're going up against other franchises and teams who have their quarterbacks and who have great foundations. That's a different thing. So whether we like the hire or not, Simon, I'm going to start with you. How many of these four teams still have the same head coach 4 years from now?
One. I think the Falcons have Raheem Morris 4 years from now, and I think that's it. I think the 4 years is a very long time in the NFL. I think Bowles and Allen, at some point, those franchises will hit the reset button. And not even because I think either are going to like ultimately fail out right over the next 4 years. I just think they're going to hit the reset at some point. And then the Panthers, Dave Canales is going to have 4 years of improvement every year. They'll win 6 games next year, 9 games the next year, 11 games the next year, and then he'll get fired because David Tepper didn't like the shirt that Canales wore in the playoff game or something like that. I don't trust Tepper to keep anybody for 4 years. So that doesn't even have anything to do with Canales or football. I think Raheem Morris is going to kill this Falcons job. I think they're a young team with a good runway. I like the staff he's already put together. I trust him to continue to put a good staff together. And they are young in all the key spots that I think he's got a long runway ahead of him. So just one, and it's Raheem Morris with the Falcons.
Ronan.
I'm going to have to agree with Simon. That's my exact answer. I think Raheem has a real shot at sticking around for a long time. But if we're not having to pick one, I think between Raheem and Canales, I think one of them will stay. I think it's a real possibility that Bryce Young can catch fire this next season, right? I mean, you give him a legitimate wide receiver one, maybe fill in a couple spots here and there, and then, you know, obviously a new offensive play caller. It'll be interesting to see, but I think one of them 4 years from now will be sticking around, Ben.
I think the number's one or zero, because even though we like Raheem Morris, none of us picked him to be the coach here. He's already had one go around with this at 21-38, and the Falcons don't have a quarterback. So no matter who came in here, whether it was Belichick trying to reach for Kirk Cousins, the Falcons haven't necessarily shown, and by the way, there's a huge stigma against teams trading up to go get a quarterback that they like in the draft. So Morris is still going to be up against it here with the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Lions and the Packers. The numbers 1 and 0. I'll stick with you guys and go 1 because I do like Raheem Morris. But he's pushing a snowball up a hill here. Simon, you get the final shot. I'm done, man.
That's all I got as well, Ben. Great job, guys. We are very happy to be talking about some really high-level football. It was great to talk long about those two games. Next week, we will have something fun, some form of an award show. We'll see how long that is, but we'll also do our Super Bowl preview next week. And then another programming note, I believe we are 95% sure. We'll come to you after the Super Bowl, immediately after the game with our reaction. It's our one-time-a-year Sunday night podcast that will be in your feed Monday morning to react to the Super Bowl. Before we get into everything, that is the NFL offseason. So programming note, next week, Super Bowl preview and award show still coming at you Tuesday morning. The week after, Super Bowl week, we'll come at you Monday morning right after the Super Bowl. We'll record Sunday night. It'll be tough going back to recording right after a game. That's going to be a late night. We'll see who all makes it to that. But in the meantime, thank you all so much for listening to the StatSheet Podcast. Make sure you're following on Twitter at StatSheet Pod. Make sure you're following Box Score Network at B Score Network. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. We appreciate you. We will talk to you next week. Have a good one.